the final week that we're spending looking through John. Now, who can remember when we started looking through John? Anyone have any idea? 6 weeks ago. You're nearly right, Martin. Steve? Easter last year. Yes, it was the 4th of May 2014. So we've been over a year going through John, and almost 60 Sundays devoted to looking at this wonderful gospel, and it's fallen to me to finish it off. So of course I will be summing up all of the previous weeks in the next 20 minutes. It's a big job. But first of all, we're going to have a dramatic reading. Now, I've got some volunteers. So we need Jesus, Joash, your Jesus. Come and stand over here. Peter, your Peter. You stand here. And Ethan, you're going to be John, so you can stand here. Now, let's just set the scene. So after being crucified, Jesus, Joash, has risen from the dead and appeared to Mary, who thought he was the gardener. And then he appeared to the disciples, except for Thomas, who wasn't there and didn't believe the other one. So later, 8 days later, Jesus appears to all of the disciples, including Thomas, who now believes. Then sometime after this, some of the disciples, including Peter and John and Thomas, they're off fishing. But they don't catch anything. Then someone shouts to them from the shore, try putting the net over the other side. And they do, and they catch loads of fish, and then they realize, that's it, it's good. Hang on, this is Jesus. This happened before. We know who he is. And then they all go for breakfast. And then Jesus talks to Peter, and Steve talked to us about that last week. And Jesus asks him 3 times if he loves him, and then Jesus tells him to tend his sheep. After this, Jesus reveals to Peter that when he is old, he will be killed for his faith. He will be martyred for following Jesus. And it's on that bombshell that's where you pick up the story today, in the last bit of John 21. So, here we go. And when he had spoken this, Jesus said to Peter, follow me. Peter, turning around, quick. Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. Peter turned. We should have had a rehearsal. Let's try it again. Try it again. Come back. It's all good practice. Now, just walk slowly, Joash, and then Peter, follow him. Now I'll try again. Peter, turning around, saw the disciple whom Jesus loved following them. So Peter said to Jesus, Lord, and what about this man? Jesus said to him, if I want him to remain until I come, what is that to you? You follow me. And then keep going. Just keep going. That round of applause. I know. A few more run-throughs and it might have been okay. No, thank you, boys. So this week we're just going to look at what Jesus is saying here and what it's important for us to kind of grab from this passage. In a nutshell, is there a PowerPoint? In a nutshell, what I would like to suggest is that Jesus is saying to Peter, don't look back. Now, we've got the PowerPoint up. There we go. Now, we had it for a second, which was nice. There we go. What shall I do? So flick on to the next slide. That was, there's Jesus talking to Peter and John following closely behind. Now, flick to the next one. Don't look back. Now, when I say don't look back, it's not like this. Or like this. And it's certainly not like this. And I think there's one more. That's not what we're talking about. It's not that something's scary behind. It's just Jesus saying to Peter, don't look back. Now, is there anyone here who likes running? Esther, brilliant. Paul, that is Chris, who ran the London Marathon, hasn't got his hand up. it's fine. Has anyone ever run in a race? Maybe at sports day, we've run in races. Val, yeah? And did anyone win their race? Brilliant, very good. Now, when you're running a race, have you ever heard anyone say to you the expression, don't look back? Why is that? Why do people say that to people if you're running a race? Peter? You could trip, yeah. Any other reasons? Slows you down, yeah. Very good. Walter? Distracts you, yeah. Now, Esther, you like running, so come up here. Now, I read this. This is written, 3 points for why we shouldn't look back, written by a sports psychologist. Okay, so Esther, what I want you to do is run really slowly that way. Okay, and then when I say what I'm saying, don't focus too much on this running slowly, because I'm going to say things and you've got to kind of enact them out. Is that okay? You can do two things at once. Brilliant. Now, so first reason why you shouldn't look back when you're running. So that's it. Go no slow, really. No, I'm talking like this, slow motion running. Okay, do it really slowly. It breaks your momentum and that's not how you run, is it? That's not how you run. Come back like with your knees kind of go in the air a bit, don't they? Like arms like this. That's it. Now look backwards. It breaks your momentum and deteriorates your form. Running is all about efficiency. Extraneous movement takes energy and creates drag in your form. And when you break your form to turn your head and upper body around, that's it, you sacrifice efficiency. So yeah, it stops you from moving forwards as fast. Brilliant. Thank you, Esther. Now, the second reason is that it puts you in the wrong mindset. What does he mean? If you allow yourself to get distracted from your goal, which is winning the race, running as hard as you can, you can quickly find yourself running subpar, not as good as you could run. When you allow yourself to look over your shoulder, you're giving yourself permission to take your mind off your goal, which will put you in danger of getting off your race plan. And the third reason why you shouldn't look behind you, it lets your competition know you are tired. Now, if we flick up the next slide, this is what we're talking about. There, now, there's Usain in the middle, running very fast. And they're looking straight ahead, aren't they? For these reasons. Now, the trouble is, I'll get a picture of Usain, but we all know who he is. He runs very fast. But in most of the pictures, he actually is looking behind him. And that's because he's so far ahead, he's just seeing how much he's won by. So don't look at those pictures. Look at this one. He's running hard, looking for the line. So if your competition know that you're tired, by looking over your shoulder, you're signaling that you're not confident you can win the race and that you're worried about them. And this will give your opponent more confidence. So what's this got to do with the passage this morning? We're going to sum these terms up in 3 words beginning with D. The first one, hopefully it'll boing in. So breaking your momentum, drag. We're going to think about drag. So if your body is doing one thing, even just by looking around, Peter shows that he's not actually totally intent on following Jesus. As Peter said, he might trip up. He might get distracted. He might fall down a big hole. Peter was physically following Jesus, which is not necessarily the same for us today in our walk with the Lord. But we follow Jesus' example and his guiding. And we can't be effective if we're doing something else with our bodies. If we're trying to do two things at once, we can't go forwards as fast. So imagine it's a bit like, I don't know if anyone here believes that you can text on your phone and walk in a straight line down the pavement. Does anyone believe that? Because it's not true. I've encountered many people who think it is true, but it's not. Now, drift, the next word. We're thinking about this, that Peter isn't totally focused on following Jesus if he's thinking about something else. Mentally, he's slightly somewhere else, isn't he? He's not thinking, wow, Jesus told me that I'm going to do all these amazing things, and then, hang on, that's a pretty flower. Or, what's going to happen to John? His mind isn't focused. Obviously, maybe finding out, as Jesus has just told him, that he's going to be martyred for his faith. That's a big thing. Maybe it's causing his focus to drift. Maybe he's thinking about all sorts of other things. How is he going to tend the sheep? How is he going to do what Jesus has just said? Maybe he's thinking about, you know, what he needs to do, all the food he needs to get, or how he's going to do this, or his planning ahead. But in any case, whatever he's thinking, he's not following Jesus as well as he could be, because his mind is drifting off on something else. And then the third one, doubt. Maybe Peter is thinking back here to when he betrayed Jesus and how he let him down, and when he denied Jesus, when he let him down, and probably felt like he doesn't deserve this chance, maybe. Maybe he's looking at John and thinking, well, John, he's the one that Jesus loved. And, you know, he was at him, next to him at the table. Like, what about John? Surely he's jumped past me in the rankings now. Maybe I'm not good enough. So Peter might have doubts. So we can see these things emerging in Peter. Jesus is saying, follow me, move forwards. But Peter's sort of looking back behind him. So Jesus says to him again, follow me. Now, the picture we're using of running a race is important, but we have to be careful. We have to think about it carefully, because if you run a race, you're running against other people, aren't you? But our life and our faith in Jesus isn't, we're not in competition with each other, are we? Well, we shouldn't be. So I'm not trying to outdo Ethan and be a better Christian than Ethan. I don't have to. That's very mean. So the question is, if we're not racing against each other, who are we racing against? Who is our competition? So I put in brackets there, drag, that's like our bodies, isn't it? The flesh, as Paul calls it, holding us back. So if we aren't looking where we're going, our bodies can stumble, can't they? We can end up falling into temptations, into bad situations, because we just weren't quite looking in the right direction, and we take a wrong turn, fall down a hole. Drift. It's a bit like the world, isn't it? That we, you know, our minds drift. Maybe, you know, on a Sunday, we're all up for Jesus. We're at church. We think that's great, yeah. But then we go back on Monday morning into work, or even before that, on our commute, and it kind of all goes out the window. We're worrying about what we've got to do at work, what we're going to have for dinner, how we're going to pay the bills, what's coming up that week that we've got to remember and not forget. And, you know, by the time we get to next Sunday, we look up and we think, oh, there's Jesus over there. I'll race up and catch him up. But in the week, we haven't been following closely because we've been distracted by other things, tempted by the things of the world. And the third one, the devil, if we allow ourselves to look back, if we doubt ourselves because of the past, because of things that are behind us, then it can stay with us. We haven't left it behind. We're still moving on. And the devil is, he's our accuser, he's our condemner, but he's not right. So those things can, all of those three things are things which can hold us back and stop us from following Jesus more closely. Now, so I'm not saying that Peter and John were in a race together. They weren't. But the thing is that Peter and John, just like you and I and everyone else, sometimes slip into thinking that they were in a race together. And we can see that earlier in the Gospels where we've got the disciples fighting and arguing about who is the best, who's the greatest, who's Jesus's number two, who's his right-hand man, who is going to be have the greatest glory in heaven because they were the best disciple. And we do that in our day-to-day lives. We have little competitions, don't we? We set up rules and then we compete with each other. And we even do this sort of, we do this, you know, when we judge other people, our neighbors, but even within our own household. So, for example, Debs and I have a little competition, which is unofficially, as I've just named it, called the Who Has Put the Most Things in the Dishwasher Which Shouldn't Have Gone in the Dishwasher and Broken competition. And it's a point where we can compare, isn't it? Yes. It's a point where we compare how we are doing. And I am so far losing. It's, yes. But we do, don't we? And that's a silly example, but in life in general, we compare ourselves to other people. That is not the right way. That is not Jesus' way. That is the way of the world. And the truth is, if in a world where people don't believe in Jesus, it's a fight for survival. That's what people think. Especially if they feel threatened, what they will do is they will push those around them away. They will grab onto those who are ahead of them and try and drag them back. And they will stamp on those below them to push them back down so that they're not going to come up and take their place. And that's kind of, in a nutshell, that's a picture of the world today and all of its problems. We're not supposed to be jostling for position, because sooner or later, even if it's just about us trying to do our best and competing against other people, it becomes something else where we try and trip each other up or push each other over to get ahead. And we see that in football. You can be whatever team you play for. You have people who try very hard, but at some point they might cheat just to get ahead. So, competing against each other that's the root of all violence. It's the root of wars. It's the root of discrimination, of bullying at school, of bullying in the workplace, gossip, slander, all of these things, people complaining about you for no good reason, internet trolling where people are just senselessly abusive for no good reason other than it takes someone else down a bit and I feel I've elevated myself slightly. And so it's not about us in our Christian lives comparing us against each other. So I could say, well, I've been to 3 more prayer meetings than Ian this week, and therefore I'm doing much better. And maybe I've had 5 answered prayers this whole year, and they've only had 1, and that makes them a bad person. So I'm doing all right. The trouble is also that when we introduce competition, one of 2 things happens. Either we become more competitive or we give up. It causes this, different things in different people. But some people will try harder and then get nasty. Or other people would just say, well, I'm not going to bother because it's not worth it. You know, if we're going to fight or do that, then I'm out. And then wondering where God is in that, saying, well, this isn't why I'm a Christian, but this is how people are behaving. I'll go off and do something on my own. So imagine if in our passage today, John, instead of just following behind, had tripped Peter up, pushed him into a bush, said something like, you know, well, I am the beloved disciple, I'm going to be closer. And then Peter turned around, rugby tackles him into the ground, and says, no, I've got the Great Commission, it's me, I'm the number one disciple. But you see, it's not supposed to be like that, is it? The world today is a rat race, but we're not supposed to be in the world, of the world. Sorry, we're supposed to be in the world, but not of the world. So we're not supposed to get caught up into those things, not with Christians and not with non-Christians. So in our lives, when we're trying to get on the train, when we're driving, when we're at work, we're not competing against each other. We're not competing against our non-Christian friends, workplace, strangers. We're doing our best. And the way to do your best is to get close to Jesus. So I don't know about you, but if I was John, who'd had this amazing friendship with Jesus, and I'd seen him twice come back, you know, after he'd come back from the grave, you'd want to get close, wouldn't you? The question is why the other disciples were hanging back. Really? So if Jesus was walking down Sydenham High Street, and Ian was on his way home, and he saw him, you'd want to follow him, wouldn't you? You'd want to get close to him. You wouldn't say, well, actually, I'm feeling a bit tired. I'll go home for a cup of tea, and then I'll come and see if he's still here. Or I've got some shopping, I'll pop into Lidl, then pop out again. You'd want to get close, wouldn't you? In fact, you know, without shoving other people out the way, you want to get as close as you possibly could, wouldn't you? Maybe even you'd think, I might want a selfie. You want to get really close, don't you? And let's be honest, there's not that many times that you think selfies, you know, well, I don't anyway. But that'd be a good one to have. But with Jesus, getting as close as possible, that's what we're talking about here, getting close. So, both Peter and John are following Jesus closely. They're close behind him. And they're two amazing individuals, which Jesus loved. And someone wrote this about this encounter. Jesus sets the two disciples face to face and shows them how he assigns a unique position to each one of them for the future, but gives each of them a different role. Now, Jesus would have known that John was closely following behind, and John would have heard, because he wrote it down, what Jesus said to Peter. Jesus knows that John's there. He knows he can hear him, and he's setting them up to each other and saying, this is what I'm doing for this person, and I'm going to do something different for you. So, take a look at the person next to you, on either side, or just one side if you prefer. Now, they're different from you. They look different. They're different, aren't they? And that's a good thing. So turn to them and say, Jesus has given you something special to do. Now, we are unique. Each one of us is unique. Jesus has given each one of us something special to do. And as we follow Jesus, we need to be aware of not just looking behind us at what's happening with everyone else, who's around us, what they're doing with Jesus. We need to get close for ourselves. But Peter and John, as we look at them in this story, they're not superhumans. They were ordinary people like you and me. They were normal. Jesus didn't just say, follow me, to Peter and John, and we're kind of, you know, just tagging along anyway. Jesus has said, follow me, to everyone. He said it to you. And our job is to follow. So Peter and John aren't in their own special category. just because Jesus was alive and they were actually physically following him. We're all there. We're all able to follow. We're all able to get close. So Jesus is saying to Peter, not just don't look back, with the next slide, saying don't look back, follow me. He's not commanding him never to look behind him. He's encouraging him. Let's look forwards. Let's look to the future. He's saying, we've made a new start. I've just recommissioned you to look after my sheep. The past is all forgiven. Let's move forward. Let's start from here and go ahead. Let's look forward to what you are going to do. Now, so maybe the best thing to do from this passage is picture yourself not necessarily as Peter, but as John. And just try, no matter what's going on around, to get close to Jesus. Our job is to follow. And I think it's nice that John finishes his gospel like this. The last couple of verses. This is the disciple who is testifying to these things and wrote these things. And we know that his testimony is true. This is John talking about himself. And there are also many other things which Jesus did, which, if they were written in detail, I suppose that even the world itself would not contain the books that would be written. It's John giving us an amazing picture of just the depth and the amazingness of everything that was happening around Jesus. And I like to think of this bit, it's sort of, in some ways, it's a funny way to end the gospel. But it's ongoing. This is the start of their walk with Jesus. This is the start of them following him properly, fully, and really closely. And it's the thing that speaks to us and says, as we're following him, amazing things will happen. More amazing things have happened to people in this room than we can probably ever even write down or understand. But just imagine that on the millions and millions of people around the world who have been touched by Jesus in many different ways, all of the wonderful things that he has done. So we have our part to play in those books continuing to be written, if you like, more than the world can hold. So that's where we end. Is following on behind Jesus.